All right. Welcome to the Tater Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Thank you very, very much to everybody who has been supporting the great station and supporting the Tater Report. We're doing well, but we could do more. You can always go still at this point. You can still go to CIUT.FM and donate. And somebody just went out and slammed the door on me. And help us out. We did very good. I'm not going to speculate on numbers. I don't want to be an informant, but it's good. But we need to bump it up. So CIUT.FM, donate. But to all those who did, thank you very, very much. And it's given us a lift. Now, we have some important matters to talk about today. And Phil Connor is here.
Good afternoon, Phil.
I forgot that. And I looked over and there he was. I'll tell you what we're going to talk about. At the halfway point, we're going to be speaking to Sandra Farias, who is a Toronto-based writer who's an authority on South America. Particularly, she has covered Argentina, Chile, and other important stories in South America, writes regularly about these matters. And there's been an election, if you haven't heard, in Argentina. And the winner is an extraordinary individual. That's a euphemism. He's a nut job, actually. And he's actually, at his rallies, he's been waving a huge Israeli flag, which is one of the peculiar things that I want to ask Sandra about, because why would he be doing that in a presidential election in Argentina? What I've read so far is just very peculiar, and so she'll enlighten us on that. But we want to also mention, and Phil, I don't know if you know about this, the union news. You have briefly been attending at the Ontario Federation of Labor, right?
Yeah, I was there for the whole day, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if there are people that are aware of it, but in Quebec, in the public sector, teachers and nurses primarily, they have a common front strike date tomorrow. And it's going to be a general strike. 450,000 people are going to go off the job tomorrow together. When I say common front, I mean, this is rare that the unions, I think it's four or five major unions, are going to take action where everybody goes out. It's not about your contract. Everybody who belongs to those unions is going to go off the job. And I think they've set a two-day time period. The way the Globe and the Star and others cover it is to say that the government is asking, when are they going to get a response to their offer? And instead of saying, these unions are about to go on a general strike for 2 days, I think that the word general strike kind of sends chills up their spine. This is not something they want to talk about. So they'd rather talk about the employer and concerns for the children. So there's that. By the way, Phil, do you have any OFL news?
Well, I do want to say that there's going to be an election of new officers. Two of the senior officers are retiring, and one of them is not. And the one who's not is Mr. Gayad. He's a young man. He's a delegate from the UFCW. He comes out of the private sector. He was a grocery clerk, and he's chairing the convention, and he's wearing a Palestinian flag while he's chairing the convention. And then he gave his report of the last 2.5 years as the secretary treasurer, and he finished his report by saying, "I need to finish my report by talking about Palestine," and he talked about Palestine, and he got a lot of enthusiasm. Few people didn't like it. Most of the delegates liked it very much. Yeah. And he talked about working class solidarity.
Tell us who he is again and why this is important. Is he a candidate, did you say?
He is the incumbent secretary treasurer, and he is a candidate for re-election. The other two senior positions will be filled by new people. because those senior officers are retiring. He is, as far as I can see, he's unopposed to be reelected as the Secretary Treasurer.
What union is he from?
He's from the UFCW, United Food and Commercial Workers. Mm-hmm. He comes out of a supermarket. That was his origins.
All right.
He's an active politician. He's a Libyan Canadian. He mentioned Sarah Jama in his speech about how she inspires us, and Doug Ford's bullying is something that we cannot accept.
Was he applauded when he said
yes,
that?
Yes, he was. Yes, okay. He was applauded.
we go by crowd, don't we?
Right.
I mean, this is like the beauty contest, right, or the singing contest.
That's right.
And who got the loudest applause?
And he spoke in terms of international working class solidarity. Nobody walked out, and nobody can criticize the speech and say that it was in any way excluding anybody or prejudice against anybody. It was a very, very
pretty suspicious conduct.
Yeah, he's
the kind of thing that really gets the eyebrows raised.
Boy, does it ever! It's like
that's a good report. I'm really glad to hear that, because by the way, hovering over this convention, we can share with our listeners is the leader of the NDP Ontario going to be attending, and what sort of reception will they receive?
That issue didn't come up.
Of course not. We're doing it on the Taylor Report,
right? Because
which is why you are racing at this moment to CIUT.fm to donate even more.
Yeah, and we will find out. I mean, there's actually no agenda for the week, which is telling. Right,
so there's no agenda.
They're going to do a daily agenda, but there's like they haven't told us who all the speakers are going to be. So I think that's an issue that's up in the air.
They've had some pretty interesting over the years. Some pretty interesting. I remember Jesse Jackson came.
Yes,
and he really got them going. Yeah.
I have to say that Fred Hahn from CUPE, he's the president of CUPE Ontario, was at the mic on a number of occasions today, very warmly received by people. Of course, Fred was the person that a few weeks ago Doug Ford and the Toronto Sun told us the labor movement must get rid of. Right.
By the way, if you really do want to be a labor leader, pick a fight with Doug Ford, and you want to get a lot of support.
Right.
They say, who is it doesn't like you? Okay, I got it.
Well, the candidate to be the president of the OFL is Laura Walton from Belleville. She's an educational assistant, and she was the one who led the CUPE near general strike at the time that Ford passed that legislation a year ago. And then, of course, Ford had to back down. So she became a personality in the news because she was a labor leader who stood up to Doug Ford. And now she is going to be the candidate to be the president of the Federation of Labor. And it appears to be that she's going to be unopposed.
My memory of her and her work, I would vote for her in a heartbeat, as they say, because she really provided vital, well-spoken, inspiring leadership at that time.
Yes, she did.
And, when you see them and you know that they're part of the organized labor, you say, make that one the president. So encouraging.
It is encouraging. I felt encouraged.
But let's break the news to our listeners, because they're not being informed. As you know, we have a media in this country, and they're very good at hiding stories, just sitting on them, and they just act like a bird waiting for an egg to go away. In this case, the Two Michaels story has taken a new twist. And Phil, here's the deal, in my opinion. They probably ought not to have those parliament things where they say, and brothers and sisters of fellow members of the Parliament of Canada, look up into the gallery and you will see. Because in March, they had Joe Biden here. And they said, and look who's in the gallery. Two of our heroes, the Michaels. And everybody said, wow, we haven't seen the Michaels. Where have they been? That's them, the heroes. And then when they had a second one in this past June, July, whenever it was, where they said, look up into the gallery, we have a hero, a Ukrainian hero who fought the Russians in World War II. And everybody jumped to their feet and said, oh my gosh, a real hero. Yeah, he's a Nazi, but I guess he's a Nazi hero. But so now let's move to the Michaels again. So the Globe and Mail reported Saturday, keep track of the days, Saturday's Globe said that one of the Michaels is suing the Canadian government because the other Michael, that would be Kovrig, Michael Kovrig, had passed intelligence, which he had provided, he, Michael Spavor, had provided to Kovrig, not knowing, he said, that it was going to be given to Canadian intelligence. And then I like this little twist, and to Five Eyes. And so we're down to one Michael now. And so now that story broke Saturday by Fife and Chase. Everybody knows that Fife and Chase are in the chase, and they're the big guys. And so I waited. So I got my Toronto Star the next day. No story. So, okay, now it's Monday. I looked at the Star. No story. They have not yet shared with their readers that one of the Michaels is suing the other Michael. It basically, the Canadian government, because he said that Michael fooled him, got him into a problem, and they went to prison because of Kovrig. That's the allegation. I wouldn't know. I never met either one of them. I definitely don't want to meet Kovrig. Kovrig has a Twitter account. If you don't know, he's a hawk. He loves American right-wing Republicans. And he likes Mr. Zenz. You know the born-again guy?
Oh, yeah.
He likes to retweet this crap. This is Kovrig. And he has the most smug, narrow-faced look at the world that I've noticed upon public figures. And so here's that. There's a story. It's at great length that the Globe discussed how the operation apparently had gone, according to sources, including, by the way, a former diplomat who had spoken to Kovrig about approaching Spavor, because Spavor was in North Korea. And so, in other words, we got handlers involved here. And think about who Kovrig is. And we did talk about it on this show. We pointed out at the time that there are a lot of questions to be asked about these people. So this former diplomat says that they regarded, that Kovrig was regarded not as an intelligence professional, but as an asset. And if you followed his conduct, and we talked about it on the Taylor Report before, Kovrig had a job as a diplomat. He had diplomatic papers, had diplomatic status. He's not an old guy, he's a middle-aged guy. What is he, 43? I don't know. Is that middle-aged? Whatever.
He hasn't reached
If you play professional baseball, it's definitely middle-aged.
Yeah.
So this, he calls himself, by the way, on his Twitter account, an Asia hand, which is, that's a new expression. They used to call these guys a China hand. And these were, in the old days of colonialism, they would say, you better talk to Frank, he's a China hand. And so he wanted to be the Asia hand, and he calls himself that on his Twitter account. So he's working as a diplomat. And I got to keep saying this. We talked about it on Taylor. He's working as a diplomat. And then in 2017, he takes a leave of absence and goes to work for the International Crisis Group. And he, during that period, apparently all these things happen. But and they said he had a diplomatic passport because they were playing games. He has a diplomatic passport, but he's actually on leave. So he's not actually any longer a diplomat, but he's got a diplomatic passport. And they said that he was told that he should travel with his diplomatic passport. When he was picked up, he didn't have it. So the question I had at the time, and we talked about it here, is what kind of game is this? He's in China as a diplomat, working, by the way, in sort of quasi-intelligence field. They said he wasn't breaking any laws, but he was trying to acquire intelligence. Then he leaves that job, and for a period that they didn't establish, he becomes an employee of the International Crisis Group. You know the name George Soros. He's the godfather of the International Crisis Group. What is George Soros' opinion of China? He says that the most dangerous man on earth, he told one of these great forums, and you can go and find it online, he says that President Xi of China is the most dangerous man on earth. So one of his employees, or the employees of International Crisis Group, is Mr. Kovrig. And yet he's also called he has diplomatic, quasi-diplomatic status. The whole thing has an odor about it. And, you know, but the Canadian media, who have, as I said, they haven't even reported this story except the Globe. The Globe's got it. The Toronto Sun picked it up because they're laughing at Trudeau. And they don't care where the mud is coming from as long as it's headed towards Trudeau. So they reprinted. The London Telegraph has gone with the story. The China, I think it's called the East China Post, is it, out of Hong Kong?
Yeah, the South China Post.
South China Post,
yeah.
They've got the story. But at the Star, they're still having meetings, and because they went out on a way out on a limb about what a innocent, et cetera, person Kovrig was. And they had a writer, and this was another clue. And I urge you to help me follow, because they have a writer named Joanna Chu. And when COVID was picked up, pardon the expression, Joanna Chu, said, "Oh, my friend has been, detained, and this is terrible." And what I was struck by was that she said she's a human rights reporter in China. And you say, isn't that a kind of an odd job description? You're a journalist, but you're interested in human rights, which is to say she's someone who has an adversarial approach to China, not a journalist approach, but an adversarial one. She's going to try to make a case against China. And I have to give her credit. She does it every day of the week. All she does is, on her Twitter account, is report negative information about China. Anything negative, it's on her Twitter account. Same with Kovrig. So when this thing happened, she said, "Oh, Kovrig is a friend of mine." And she says, "I remember the days. It was so thrilling to be running in the alleys of Beijing to avoid the police while meeting with dissident lawyers." And so it struck me that and then she said she and Kovrig were doing this work together. Well, she did say we exchanged notes. So the Star, and particularly Joanna Chu, were doing a same smear China line of work, which has never been emphasized by anybody talking about this case. Kovrig himself is very hostile to China. And he's, go to his account, and you'd be amused to know, Phil, that he says on the account, he has a picture of himself, of course, and a flag of Ukraine. And the flag of Ukraine, under it says, "Ukraine is you." And that's, pardon his bad grammar, because Ukraine is not me. I know that. But he says it is. He says it's you. So nobody flagged this with any skepticism. Instead, they bought the whole picture that poor old Spavor and poor Kovrig. And instead of saying, "Look, on the orders of Donald Trump, we arrested Meng Wanzhou, who is an executive, one of the biggest companies in the world, certainly in technology, in the field that she's in. On the orders of Donald Trump, that business was destroyed in Canada, and the end result was that Huawei is wiped out here by will of the government. And China was rightly infuriated because allegedly she had violated U.S. sanctions, but they weren't Canadian sanctions. She had violated no Canadian law. As a matter of fact, there was an exemplary company used to sponsor Hockey Night in Canada, and that's Don Cherry, for crying out loud, at the day. You remember Don Cherry? That was a long time ago. But anyway, they used to
be. We all remember Don Cherry.
Don is gone. So maybe it's part of the conspiracy. Who knows? Sure. But at any rate, so we carried out the orders of Donald Trump, who 99% of Canadians think he's cracked and dangerous. But we did it what he told us to do because that's what we do. We just follow. And China, of course, instead of saying, well, we'll arrest the Canadian businessman for the fun of it, no. They just took two guys who were highly dubious characters and Canada tried to play the game that how innocent they were. But it was absurd to say that because, for one thing, Mr. Spavor already had become kind of well-known because he had taken Dennis Rodman to meet the leader of North Korea. And everybody in Canada, when that happened, said, Dennis Rodman? Again, really? And then later he gets picked up. And why didn't they go back to the Rodman story and say, wait a minute? So we have two stories at once. In fact, one of the Michaels says the other one was doing an intelligence work. That's the fact. And there is a lawsuit, unless somebody's going to say there isn't, or no, wait a minute. There is the threat of a lawsuit because Spavor is asking for compensation for the time he suffered in prison because a Canadian, he says, that he was dealing with was passing intelligence to Five Eyes. And I'm glad I said Five Eyes because that brings up the whole thing of the need for an independent Canadian foreign policy and non-membership in an intelligence gathering multi-nation system, because we read about CSIS, pardon me, not CSIS, but of Five Eyes. Well, we could throw CSIS in; they're connected. Five Eyes share information with each other, and they, according to people who've written the history of them, and they've been in and out of court a few times, by the way, they spy on one another's nationals. If we have a law here that says, well, you can't spy domestically on so-and-so, you'd be violating Canadian law. At the Five Eye meeting, they say to the Australian guy, we want you to spy on this guy and tell us what you find out. And he says, sure thing. And then later you return the favor. So it's a dirty way of getting around the law of Canada, saying you can't spy domestically. So the Five Eyes is a raw version of foreign interference in the internal affairs of Canada. And only in this case, the victim is compliant and says, oh, that's okay. The Americans can spy on us. The British can spy on us. And the Australians and New Zealand. It's a very corrupt process. And when you read, if you look at Michael Kovrig's Twitter and read his articles, he is an American zealot in the sense that he understands, as does his wife. By the way, you remember his wife, Miss?
Oh, yes.
Vera, pardon me, Vina, I'll get it right, Vina Najibullah. She's not the leader of
that was the leader of Afghanistan once.
Yes.
It's not her.
She's no longer with Michael Kovrig, but she has on her Twitter, They both are zealots for American foreign policy. They have no compunction about, and indeed they seem to want to work for American-based operations. They didn't like the meeting when President Xi was in San Francisco. That made them unhappy, and Kovrig and his ex-wife on their Twitter accounts were sliming meetings because they're protecting us from China. At any rate, the story, we have the two-part story. One, we were sold a bill of goods about who the two Michaels were. And two, the media hasn't yet in this country decided to address it. And I'm waiting for the Toronto Star to finally talk about it. And I haven't seen that the CBC has. We know very knowledgeable people. Your friend Riley, he said that he hadn't heard about this story.
Yeah.
And
well-educated guy, he's at the top of the world.
I don't know many people as informed as he is.
By the way, if you go to the internet tonight and you look at the CBC, there's nothing about this story.
Yeah.
Just nothing.
They haven't, because they haven't gotten orders. You know what has happened is that until Washington tells them what they think, they don't know what they think. Uh-huh. Because also they're like a cat on a hot tin roof. They don't know where this problem is coming from, and they don't know how to correct it. And so anything they say might get them into more trouble. Some are even suspecting that the meeting between Xi and Biden was warm enough to make the Canadians who've been wanting to chase China and been getting all exercise about it, that maybe there's going to be a change of course and they're going to have to start crawling all the way to Beijing to get back in the game because people say, gee, they didn't invite Trudeau. Well, of course not. The position of China now is that we're a vassal and there's no point in talking to us. If he wants to know what we think, he'll ask Biden. And hopefully Biden will tell us because it gets embarrassing. Anyway, this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I want to say one thing before we move on to our guest in a couple of minutes is that the Prime Minister of Israel, Netanyahu, was on Fox News yesterday, and he said, we are fighting in Gaza America's war. We're fighting America's war. Which is something of a revelation, actually, for some people. But strangely enough, that's what Iran and Syria and Hezbollah have been saying. Is that they said, when you see two aircraft carriers in the United States in the Eastern Mediterranean, and by the way, when they fire things at us, they seem to be involved. But the old argument is that Israel is a forward post for Western imperialism, seems to be playing out. And Netanyahu said it himself. And I would flag an issue that I hope everybody will watch closely, is that they had this rally for Israel in Washington, D.C., and the feature speaker was Reverend Hadji. You know about Mr. Hadji, the evangelical Christian Zionist?
Yes, yes.
Who thinks that, he says the apocalypse is definitely coming.
Right.
I looked him up, and he has a long history, starting with his enthusiastic support in the 1960s for George Wallace, America's last standing noisy segregationist. And that was it. So that's where he started. And now he's promising an apocalypse. A scary situation. And so anyway, we flagged that.